There was no point trying to talk Cord out of going with me. We just climbed into her fetch and started as soon as the picnic was over. We had to backtrack 30 miles to find a north-going road that would not peter out before the mountains. At the first town on that road, I used up my money card buying fuel, food, and warm clothes. Then I used up Fra Jad's. While we were loading the stuff into the fetch, Ganeliel Crade pulled up. Sitting next to him was Saman. Both were grinning, which was a novelty. They didn't have to announce that they were coming with us, and we didn't have to discuss it. They got busy buying the same sorts of things we had just bought. Crade had an ammunition can full of coins, and Saman had information in his G-jaw that worked in lieu of money. I got the sense that each of them had obtained funds from his respective community. I wasn't happy to see Crade again. If it really was true that he was getting money for this journey from the people of Sambal, it raised all sorts of questions as to what he was really up to. Crade had reinstated the three-wheeler in the back of his fetch, so he didn't have much room left over. Most of the bulky stuff went into Cord's fetch. We had no idea where we were going or what to plan for, but we all seemed to be carrying roughly the same picture in our heads, namely that Orlo had gone up into the mountains for some reason. It would be cold up there, and we might have to camp, so we got things like winter bed rolls, tents, stoves, and fuel. Saman had an idea that he might be able to track Orlo, and Crade was planning to make inquiries with some of his co-religionists along the way. We all climbed back into our vehicles and headed north. It would be 2 hours' drive to the foothills, where Crade knew of places to camp. He led the way. This was a thing he felt a compulsion to do, and I was tired of fighting it. Cord was content to follow. Crade, sitting upright at the controls and Saman hunched over the glowing screen of his super Jija, gave us the feeling that the two of them must be seeing to all of the details. I wouldn't have been comfortable following either of them alone, but together they'd never agree on anything, so I judged it was prudent. I regretted parting from people like Arcibald and Leo with whom I could talk about things, but once we turned north and started forging toward the mountains, the regret vanished, and instead I felt relief. So much had been revealed to me over the course of the last 24 hours, not only about the cousin's ship, but even more so about the world I had lived in for 10.5 years, that it was too much for me to make sense of in one go. Just to name one example, the thatched roofs on the nuclear waste cylinders alone, if I had learned of it in the consent, would have taken me a little getting used to. I was much more at ease sitting next to my Sib, staring out the windscreen, my sole responsibility being to chase a wild frog across the waste. The night before, at the Bayesian Monastery, I had accommodated certain new odd facts in my mind just by sleeping. A similar trick might work for me now. By doing something completely different for a few days, I might chance upon a better understanding than I could get by kneeling in a cell and concentrating on it, or having a wordy discussion in a chalk hall. And even if all of that was completely wrong, I didn't care. I simply needed a break. Cord spent a lot of time talking on the Jija with Rosk. She had kissed him goodbye on the Sambal village green. He had to go back home and work. Now there were issues of some kind to be worked out. They didn't have just one long conversation on the Jija. Instead, they made and broke contact 10 or so times. It got on my nerves, and I wished we'd get to some wild reach where her link wouldn't work. But after a while, I got used to it and started to wonder, if Rosk and Cord had to do so much communicating to rig for a few days' separation, what did that imply for me and Ayla? I couldn't stop recalling the shocked look on Tullia's face as we had pulled out yesterday afternoon, part of which, I was sure, came from that she thought I was being beastly to Ayla. Is there currently a mechanism in place for sending letters? I asked Cord during a breather between micro-conversations with Rosk. From here, it'll take some doing, but the answer is yes, she said. Then she got a big smile. You want to write to a girl, Raz? Since I had never mentioned Ayla to her and had asked my question in such a colorless way, I was shocked and then quite irritated that she had figured this out with no effort. She was still deriving joy from the look on my face when her G-jaw twittered and gave me a few minutes to get my composure back. Tell me about her, Cord demanded, as soon as she disconnected. Ayla, you met her. She's the one. I remember Ayla. I liked her. Really? That was not obvious to me. That and so many other things, Cord said in such an airy, innocent voice that it almost slipped by me. Then I had to spend a minute being silent and dignified. She and I have hated each other pretty much our whole lives, I said. Especially recently. Then we started something. It was pretty sudden. Really wonderful, though. Cord gave me a grateful smile and almost swerved off the road. The next day she was evoked. This was before we knew it was going to become a convox, so in effect she was dead to me after that. This was, I guess, pretty upsetting to me. I sort of put it out of my mind by working. Then when I got evoked yesterday, which seems like 10 years ago now, it opened up the possibility that I might see her again. But then a few hours later, I decided to make this little detour, which just turned into a bigger detour. As a matter of fact, I am technically a feral now, and so I might never see her again because of the way I just let Fra Jad push me around. So you might say things are complicated. Hard to say just how long I'd have to spend on a G-jaw with her, sorting this one out.